What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. We got another special guest on with us today. I'm Burge. I'm here with my good pal, Manish. Manish, who we got on with us today?
Yeah, we are really lucky to have Jordan Palmer, a man who wears many hats, quarterback guru, quarterback consultant to many of the top quarterbacks coming out of college every year. Also a year-round consultant for quarterbacks like Joe Burrow and Sam Darnold, who is now one win away from hoisting the Lombardi Trophy. Jordan is also an entrepreneur, starting the Thread Performance line, which focuses on nutrition for younger quarterbacks, preteen, teen, and up. And, you know, I've always believed for as long as Jordan has been working with quarterbacks that, you know, the best teachers are the people that inspire confidence in their students. And, you know, I look at Jordan as a teacher more than anything else. And I think if you look at the players that he has mentored through the years, they have an unshakable belief in themselves. And part of that is because the person teaching them has an unwavering support in them. And anyone who's been around Jordan or has listened to Jordan through the years knows that he is just effusive in the praise of the guys he works with. And we're going to focus obviously on Sam Darnold today, but just a credit to, you know, who he is and how he approaches, you know, his business and his tutelage of these players. So Jordan, it's a pleasure to have you aboard, and can't wait to kind of dig deep into Darnold and Drake May and some of the other issues of the day.
Wow, Manish, that's quite the intro. I appreciate it. That means a lot. And yeah, I'm honored to serve these guys on their journey. And, you know, Sam is being like noted and a lot of spotlights are shined on his journey, as unique as it may seem. And honestly, it is unique. But the way I look at it, I'm pretty objective here and unemotional about all of my clients, because I have to be, and they need somebody who is objective and unemotional when they go to get guidance and counseling. But as unique as Sam's is, they're all a different version of that. Sam getting spotlighted, the stage that he's about to play on, the stage he's been playing on, and just how it's been, his journey's been so public. The highs are so public. The lows were so public. I can't imagine or wrap my head around how many young, not just quarterbacks, but young athletes are going to see themselves at some point, you know, see themselves in Sam's journey at some point in it and use his success story to help them in their career. So it's incredible to be a part of it. And then to, you know, in the future, sit back and watch people really draw inspiration from it.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because when we first spoke, Sam had just turned 21 and he's 28 now. You have literally known him for half of his life since he was a freshman in high school, you know, 14, 15 years old. And so you've seen the development from rudimentary to now on the doorstep of being a Super Bowl champion. I did want to get your thoughts, given the news, the recent news of the week that the Vikings parted ways with their general manager. And of course, Sam's resurgence started a year ago playing for Kevin O'Connell and having what was at that point a career year in Minnesota. Were you surprised that the Vikings did not retain him? I know they invested the top 10 pick in J.J. McCarthy, but Sam had played so well, had not really been a passenger on that team. He'd been the driver and brought out the best in players like Justin Jefferson. I know personally that Kevin O'Connell had an affinity for him. So when they didn't bring him back, was that a little bit of a surprise to you?
My perspective on this, I was pretty in the middle of it. And so on the side of things that I'll share, I think, you know, I'm pretty surprised anytime a GM gets fired at the end of January. It's just a weird time, you know. It kind of like, you know, Sean Payton fired his offensive coordinator last week. I was kind of surprised by that, right? If you're playing late January, usually you lose a coach to a better job, not to unemployment. So the timing of it, yes. But I think it's funny because I'm in the middle of this. Just like Manish, you're in the middle of a lot of stuff and you have to report, but there's certain things you can't report. I think I've watched a lot on Instagram, on the new, you know, I've heard a lot of the takes on the Vikings, and the take I haven't heard, which is hovering around what actually happened, is something that actually happens a lot. And that's when you have a general manager with 1 year remaining on his contract and a draft coming up, and the security.
Hello?
deal and they draft a quarterback in the first round, whether they trade up, trade back, or just take their slot. And the security of having a bad year, if you do that and you have a tough year, a lot of times it's an easy conversation to say, well, I got a rookie quarterback. Give me one or two more. And we saw the Rams do this, right? They traded, I think, 3 first-round picks to move up and select Jared Goff number one. And feels like a lifetime ago now. And at the time, the team was moving to L.A. They just took Jared Goff. They had a terrible year. Jared Goff looked terrible on Hard Knocks, which was a debacle. And there was all these ramifications that came from it. And at the end of the day, Stan Kroenke had to choose between Jeff Fisher, the head coach, and Les Snead, the general manager. To this day, I believe Jeff Fisher may still be unemployed. And Les Snead's become one of the best general managers in the NFL. He's been to a Super Bowl and lost, won another one, and then been to, I think, back-to-back NFC title games. So the decision to draft JJ may have less to do with JJ than what I just said. And then Sam Darnold, I just think, you know, you bring somebody in, and I don't know the situation, but fans don't realize that when you have a head coach and a GM, it's in their contracts somewhere who gets to decide the draft, somewhere who gets to decide final roster, somewhere who gets to handle free agency. It's not fantasy football where it's your roster and you can ask your buddies for input. These are contractually tied to individuals who have final say-so, so that if there is a disagreement, one person can go, I appreciate your input, but this is what we're going to do. And so the Vikings fans and all the takes and all that stuff, once I start clicking on them and watching them, I get fed all this Vikings stuff from all these fans on my feed. It's been funny to watch because I haven't seen anybody hit that one. And so it's safer to say it now. But, you know, I think any resentment that fans have towards J.J. McCarthy for not being better may not be actually due at J.J. And resentment towards Sam Darnold being able to walk out the door, I don't know that it should be pointed at Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, I mean, I can safely say that it can't be pointed at Kevin O'Connell. So I know how much Kevin likes Sam, and obviously
well,
I can say the same about
Jeff. I know
Jeff.
Sam intimately well, and if you ask me, am I surprised that he's in the Super Bowl? I would go surprised. I don't know. It's hard to get to the final two, but in terms of like the numbers he put up and the amount of games he won, no, I called it. I talked about it in the media a lot before the season happened. Right, I did last year too. But I bet if you ask Kevin O'Connell before the season, how do you think Sam Darnold's going to play this year? And he would say top five in MVP, and we'll end up in one of the best teams at the end, right? Depends on the team. So the people that know Sam intimately well are not surprised at all.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good segue because I remember the first time we spoke, Sam had been a New York Jet for, I don't know, 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever it might have been. And you said to me, you said two things that kind of resonated. One is, you can look for all the crazy and wild stories over the next 15 years about Sam Darnold. You're never going to find it. And now we're like halfway through that 15-year mark. He's, you know, seven years or so into his career. And you know, outside of getting mono, which everybody in their early 20s gets, there hasn't been one outlandish story surrounding him. A lot of that, of course, is his own makeup, his family's makeup. His parents are awesome. So I remember that. The other thought,
The other thing I said? I remember that comment. Do you remember the other thing I said? I said, wait, you won't find, over the next 15 years, you won't find a crazy story or even a brief example of him creating an excuse for blaming somebody else.
Right. And that's been
also
true. Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's, and you know, kind of, it speaks to myriad factors. What I thought was really interesting is that, again, you stand behind your guys because you believe in them for a reason, because you're working with them so closely. And at that point, you had worked with Sam for, you know, six, seven years, somewhere in that neighborhood. You said he was going to be an absolute superstar. And I can't imagine what it would have been like if things were different in New York. And obviously, he got a lot of benefit working with Kyle Shanahan that 1 year behind Brock Purdy. He got a lot of benefit working with Kevin O'Connell. You know, Kubiak's done a terrific job with him in Seattle. But I want to ask you, when you look at his play, and there's probably a lot of factors, a lot different being a 21-year-old rookie versus now, you know, a 28-year-old veteran. You know, one of the things coming into the NFL was ball security. And I remember one of the things you told me, and maybe getting a little bit too inside baseball here, but keeping his left hand on the ball when he's rolling out of the pocket. If you look at his statistics on paper, he did lead the NFL in takeaways. Six of them were 13 of them were interceptions, six of them were fumbles. But when you look at how his game has progressed in terms of ball security, digging deeper at the numbers, what has impressed you, and what kind of strides has he, you know, tangibly made in that area throughout his career?
Well, you know, there's sack fumbles and there's tip picks for every quarterback, so there's a little bit of an asterisk. And then there's just straight fumbling it, and there's straight throwing it to the wrong guy. But very specifically, I mean, this is what we do. I believe that this position comes down to two things, on the physical side, at least. How do you move and how do you throw? And efficiency is the common denominator there. How do we become more efficient as a mover? If I'm standing in the pocket and I need to leave front side, leaning forward and stepping behind myself to initiate a movement is inefficient. Changing direction. Most guys change direction inefficiently or not as efficient as they could. And then throwing mechanics come down to efficiency. Now, when it comes to throwing mechanics, all these guys' mechanics should evolve. I don't like the word fix. I don't change things on people. I don't fix things. These guys are not broken. It should evolve. Everything about you should evolve. Like you mentioned, you met Sam when he was 21, and now he's 28. So a lot's evolved, you know, financially, life, philosophically, religiously. You know, we're growing. We should evolve. But in terms of ball security and as it pertains to fumbles, you know, he was a guy that would consistently take his left hand off the ball. And he had a lot his first years in the league, but he had 10 at SC his last year. I remember that number because that's what all the GMs were asking me during draft prep. Can you fix a fumbler? Is he a fumbler? You know, it wasn't fumbling, getting it punched out when he was becoming a runner. It was leaving the pocket. And when you isolate that cohort of leaving the pocket, and then you can break down how is he leaving the pocket and what's inefficient about it. When you lean forward and false step behind yourself, you typically take your left hand off the ball because you're starting to run. Like left knee up, right arm forward, you know, like every person walks and runs. That's what happens. And so really updating his software on how he creates movement and changes direction over the years he hasn't taken his left hand off the ball in two seasons, and I'm breaking down every snap. And the only time he has taken his left hand off the ball was when it's tucked in his right as a runner and he's using his left hand for something. And so that is a pattern that has to be, you know, written into his software. And so Sam, you know, we do that and you know, high five for the work that my team does. But it's irrelevant if Sam's not willing to do what he's done the last 5 years, which is spend 6 weeks, 2 to 4 days a week, depending on, because we ramp up in the off season at the time of year when he's not throwing yet, on a basketball court with no football. 5 years, 6 weeks straight, basketball court, movement, no football. It's not boring. You're sweaty and tired. It's essentially the most boring work you could do compared to what else you could do to get a quarterback. So yeah, my team and I have like really built an emphasis and laid out a plan and helped him execute it. But I think the only thing I've been frustrated about these last, you know, 2 years is the amount of people getting credit for Sam Darnold over Sam Darnold. He's the one who did all the work. And he did that after a terrible year. He did that getting ready to go be the backup in San Fran. He did that. You know, this is his fifth team, but it's his like fifth offense in 5 years too. And so him putting in the work to learn the new footwork and build the movement patterns to support that. I mean, it's like trying to get good at golf, but for a month straight, you're just going to putt. I mean, at some point it's boring, but if you do, I bet you're better at golf.
That's very interesting. Cause you know, I'm not a football professional. I'm more on the fan side of things. So hearing you talk about that stuff that the everyday casual fan doesn't see, about Sam Darnold is just, it's mind blowing to me because, you know, I'm a Patriots fan through and through. So I live up in New England. So I saw him twice a year early in his career, and, you know, seeing what he is now versus what I saw back when he was with the New York Jets is like night and day. And it's obviously it's due to all that work that he's been putting in, especially with you and on his own time. It's really incredible to see.
Yeah. And it just couldn't happen to a better guy. I've been doing, you know, I've been inquired about to talk the media here this week, and I haven't really been doing much media the last few years. But I'll just bring this up because this is a common topic right now, is if you were to follow that question up with why, right? Night and day. We don't usually use night and day with an athlete, a professional athlete. You know what I mean? Night and day, right, from high school to the end, to the pros, but not night and day from being a high first round pick. You know, this is not Brock Purdy here. You know, that's a darling story. This guy's a third pick in the draft and very easily could have been the first pick in the draft, right? And mm-hmm. And might have been the third pick in the draft the year before if he was eligible to come out. So this is a guy we were expecting. I think, you know, when somebody goes high, you expect him to play well, right, at some point. And I just think whether it's him, it's Baker Mayfield, it's Jared Goff getting ran out of L.A. and shipped off to Detroit, it's Geno Smith. I know he had a tough year, but still incredible resurrection in Seattle. Daniel Jones is the most recent. Any of these guys, I actually think I've really studied this, and I've essentially talked to all of them as well about this. Yeah, the common denominator is actually resilience. Isn't that ironic? All the things all these tangibles and intangibles, and at the end of the day, these resurrection, these guys like rebuilding their careers, they're not butterflies that are hatching for the first time. They're phoenixes. They're like rising again. Mm-hmm. And it's actually resilience. Because all those five guys, they're all different height, different ethnicity, from different backgrounds, from different colleges, were different level draft picks. So none of the things actually are common denominators, besides the resilience to be able to get through that and continue to maintain the same self-belief. And this is where the credit, and you go, okay, how does that happen? And I think the credit goes, honestly, to the people in the circle, the high school buddies, the fiance, the mom, the high school coach, whoever it is that's keeping these dudes grounded and reminded of who they really are. And so Sam gets to a position in Minnesota where he's taking all of those things, but also hasn't changed at all. He's just evolved and is ready to take advantage of an opportunity that he did last year, and then brand new team did again this year, just better.
Jordan, why do you think? Why do you think that he's still? I mean, this is amazing because I have an interesting perspective. Just because I kind of knew what the Jets allowed him to do, for lack of a better word, as a rookie, when Jeremy Bates was his offensive coordinator, and they absolutely loved moving the pocket by design, and they absolutely loved moving the pocket to his left, which is highly unusual for a right-handed quarterback. Very unusual for a coaching staff to give a guy like that carte blanche to do that. And then I know that when he had the coaching change after his rookie year, the new staff really wanted him to develop into more of a pocket passer, and I would say discouraged rolling out of the pocket specifically to his left. But now, you know, even all these years later, he's got such an ability to excel running to his left, you know, flipping his hips, which is a very difficult thing to do, and then throwing it on the money, whether it's, you know, a short pass or second level pass, whatever it might be. Are you glad that he wasn't coached out of that, and that you know, at this stage of his career, he's actually being encouraged to make plays like that, because he's been great at that for like a decade?
Yeah, I've been saying for a long time, and it's a subjective opinion, but I think he's the best off-platform thrower in the league. I mean, if you go back to, like, the throw that he made to who's the little slot receiver with the Jets back in the day, he was rolling left, Braxton Berrios.
Berrios, yeah.
I mean, that's still to this day maybe the best throw, or I think the coolest throw that Sam's made. He's rolling left, and Braxton's going left to right, and he just hits him in the face.
That's the best pass. I mean, he made another play where he eluded attack.
Well, I don't know that I've seen anybody make an off-platform throw that I thought was more impressive than that one.
And yeah, that was an unbelievable play. I mean, unfortunately, yeah.
Like,
unfortunately,
trying to do that twice in a row. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was an unbelievable.
Any of the best players in the world.
What I remember about that play was, what a great play. It was toward the end of a game where they were getting killed. So people are not going to remember that unless it's you or someone who's, you know, watched a lot of Jet games. But yeah, that was probably the single best pass I've ever seen Sam make.
Yeah. Or off-platform-wise, I've ever seen anybody make, if I'm being honest. So he's always had that in him. I think what happened with Adam Gase, you can say it now based off of, I don't know if he's even working anymore, but like, it was just the best managing quarterback. Fire who you got and bring in the right coordinator for that guy, because it's way more expensive to whiff on a pick because you didn't develop him than it is to pay the buyout in an offensive coordinator's contract. It's just not even real money at the end of the day. So even just switching it up that next year and the GM and McCarthy, you know, it was just, it couldn't have been, it was essentially how not to do it the first 3 years of Sam's career. And the Jets aren't the only people to do that. Lots of teams fall victim to that. Bases are going, no, that's my story too. But it was essentially how not to do it. And then you think about the personnel that he had. You know, to go get Le'Veon Bell as the highest paid player on their offense, I think Robbie Chosen was the number one receiver. You know, it's just across the board, personnel wise, changing the coordinators. You know, everyone blames that it's hard for to play in New York and the media, and people are really quick to blame that. You got to look at it organizationally. And I've got enough diehard Jets fan friends to know that, like, I'm not speaking out of left field here, you know. And it was pretty apparent to everybody. And, but yeah, I think Sam, I don't know that he got coached out of or into anything. I just think he's been on a run here. And you know, everyone talks about Kevin O'Connell's when it turned, or Sam Fran. You know, his last year in Carolina, the first, I think, four games, he was 4-0, playing really good for a guy named Joe Brady, who was just named the head coach of the Bills. And he was balling through four games. And when McCaffrey got hurt week five, I believe, you know, it just kind of came unraveled. And that was another roster. Again, the number one receiver is Robbie Chosen. So not an indictment on him. It's just different than Jackson Smith and Jigmer or Justin Jefferson the last 2 years. So it was a combination of just so many elements that are not specific to Sam Darnold. A lot of guys deal with this. Josh Allen's number one target his first 2 years in the league. Manish, you know who it was? Number one target.
Is he still in the league?
No.
Oh, I have no idea.
I couldn't tell you.
I actually need to remember his name, but he was the first round pick out of Florida State by Carolina. Big guy.
Oh, Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin Benjamin.
Kelvin,
yeah.
Benjamin was his number one target his first 2 years in Buffalo. Okay.
I'm just saying, this
is not a Jets specific thing here. Okay.
This is a systemic problem. Look, I think with Sam, I mean, it's probably another podcast in its entirety, but I think with Sam, you know, not having the requisite skill position players was critical. But I think just as important, if not more important, was the offensive line just wasn't where it needed to be, and they didn't really put in the resources. A lot of that was because of turnover, and then the new general manager wanted to bring in his own guy, and, you know, ultimately shipped him off to Carolina, drafted Zach Wilson. We kind of know how that unfolded, but for Sam, I want to get your thoughts, because you know him so well. It's easy for us to say, look, he's got a great makeup and things don't bother him. And I remember talking to him when he was a kid in my eyes, and he said he wasn't, you know, he was never on Twitter. I think he was on Instagram. You know, I don't know what he's doing now, social media wise. But all that being said, it is very difficult. I mean, it's difficult for a 35, 45 year old man to block out criticism if you're in the public eye. But for somebody in their early 20s in a pressure cooker like New York, and having people, you know, let's be honest. I mean, this happened not only with Sanchez, it happened with Gino before him. It happened with Mark Sanchez before him. I mean, these guys they're putting under the grinder here. I mean, if they don't do well, they're getting ripped left and right. And I've always admired all of those guys. Like, when things are that hard, it's easy for me as a reporter to say, well, you just block out the noise. Well, you're not living it. Like, I'm not living it. I'm not living what Darnold was living at that point in his career. That's got to be exceedingly hard. I mean, what about his internal makeup allowed him to not only get through that part of his career, but to actually use those failures and that criticism as a way to really build up his inner strength and ultimately, you know, become the player that he has become?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a lot of elements to it, and a lot of them would be, Sam would be the person to ask, you know, this person at this time, this comment at that time, this lesson that I learned at this time. But from my perspective, I think guys that go through the highs and lows, which is, I mean, you can make the argument it's just life, but the highs and lows of being a franchise quarterback, you know, how consistent your circle around you is and how much truth you get on a regular basis. Like literally how many doses of truth do you get? And part of that is truth from people who know you best. There's an element of whatever your faith is, the truth that you get, but how consistent is that throughout those highs and lows? Because when the people in around you come and go, the people come around you when it's high and come around you when it's low, I think you can kind of lose what's up, what's directions up, what's directions down. So I would say it's a testament to the people around Sam. Some of them are his high school buddies and some of them are, you know, it's just his circle. But I've been talking about this a lot, and throughout the years, this is kind of how I've helped Sam and other guys going through tough times, is to really try and isolate it, even if it's just an exercise. But to think about these hard times as reps. And, you know, guys don't like squatting weight. They don't like throwing a barbell on their back and doing back squats. Like, that's not fun. Nobody likes to do that. But you do it to get stronger and potentially faster. So there's a result that you're chasing, so you're willing to do it. And so if you can look at it, these hard times, whether that's a tough loss and you're the reason you lost, or it's the entire internet making fun of you, or whatever it is, or real stuff happening personal in your life, like real things, not football things. If you can, just as an exercise, think about them like reps. And you have the same methodology that these reps, the sum of these reps will create an advantage for me. If I squat enough and at this often and this weight, and I think about it and I put good things in my body and I don't put bad things in my body, it's going to create an advantage for me. At some point, I'm going to get stronger, right? And so, as we sit here now, you know, maybe there was a different time in New York when things were going bad that it was noisier, but I don't know. Getting ready for the Super Bowl and the 10 days leading up to it's probably about as noisy as it gets. But the same muscle that was strengthened through the reps of dealing with that adversity, honestly, objectively, is the same muscle that he needs to use this week to just be worried about the New England Patriots defense and what they're going to do to them. And nothing else. So my confidence in Sam Darnold being calm, composed, and playing one of the or the best game of his life is really high, because I know that muscle that I talked about. Manish, I read stuff. You were in the mix too. Right? You guys all dumped on him.
I have gotten my fair share of heat. Wait, I've gotten my fair share of heat of being an eternal Sam Darnold apologist. Over the last 10 years.
That's great. That's great. No, but I mean, if he sees ghosts, everybody wrote about it, right? No, but I'm just saying, like, the same muscle that he got from getting drugged through the mud. It's not even just the media. It's the Jets going, we're going another direction. And then Carolina Panthers going, just a heads up, we're going to Mayfield. Things are throughout that process. The muscle that gets really strong there is the same muscle you're going to use to be hyper-focused on what you need to be focused on this week. And when Sam's locked in and focused, he's like 44-6 or something, whatever, the last 2 years.
That's pretty incredible. I want to flip it now. I think this might be a good time. I want to flip you to the other side in this game. You know, we talked a little bit before we started recording with Drake May that you've spent a little bit of time with him. And obviously he's taken quite a big leap in year two under Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels in the Patriots offense there. And I wanted just to pick your brain on, you know, what have you seen from Drake May this year that's different from last year that caused like such a big jump? Because I don't think anybody around these parts up in New England really expected, you know, this much of a jump for him in year two under a new coaching staff.
Well, I think stability, Mike Vrabel brings the stability that the Patriots organization is used to. And, you know, it's tough on these quarterbacks because, you know, whether it's what we hear growing up as a young quarterback or the way that they're portrayed in the movies and TV shows, the quarterback's like supposed to be the leader on the team. You know, he's supposed to like break it down and say, bring it up guys, and yell at everybody for not finishing through the line and say, and give a great speech. The problem with that is when you got to do that as a rookie and learn how to play football in the NFL and figure these protections out and get to know the angle. There's just so much newness when you're a rookie. So many things are new. The length of the season, the offense, the coverages you see, the schedule on a weekly basis, everything is new. And so if it's a pie chart, and I actually, like, in my, when I present to guys to work with them for the draft, I actually have this slide. It's a picture of Trevor Lawrence and all the things that were going to be new for him. Okay. And then my job is to come in and remove some of the things and make them so that they're not new. So by the end of draft prep process, that list of newness isn't all there. But the list, even if I help you out and I get preparing for a bunch of stuff, there's still a lot of new things. So if it's a pie chart and you break down where all your time and energy goes into those things, and leading the team is more than like 2%, it's a misallocation of resources as far as I'm concerned. So it's the staff's job to make sure that this rookie quarterback's job isn't to be a leader. And it sounds weird because we all think the quarterback's the leader of the team. Well, not as a rookie. He's got too many other things he should get really good at and focused on. And so I think when Vrabel comes in, the leadership, the stability that he brought, McDaniels, the coordinators, all that. I mean, it's a good roster too. But I think Drake being able to come in last year, play, get a lot of the newness out of the way, and then have himself an offseason where he can just focus on getting better at executing each play and putting himself in a position to make good plays and good decisions. Then I think he did that. He put himself in a position to do that. And then you go, well, he's also kind of like one of the most talented guys in the league. He probably throws it damn near as good as anybody. He runs around damn near as good as anybody. Very fluid, very confident. And, you know, he's the third overall pick in a crazy draft class. You know, any other draft, he's number one. A lot of other drafts, he's number one. You know, he's going to go number one this year. Probably would have gone number one last year. You know what I mean? So he's a unique talent anyways. And, you know, surprised they're in the Super Bowl for sure. But but surprised that he balled out and went off? Like, no. Not at all. I thought he would do really well, and I'm a huge Mike Vrabel fan. I figured it would take Vrabel 2 years max to be playing like this, and he did in the first year.
Yeah, it's been an incredible watch. Now, a thought just popped into my head because we were talking about Drake and how he played as a rookie. You know, from your perspective, do you see that there's more of a benefit for these rookie quarterbacks to sit for a year rather than get the experience playing and being kind of thrust into that leadership type role? Do you see more of a benefit with that?
I think it's completely dependent on the emotional state of the quarterback. So if it's a quarterback that has unwavering self-generated confidence, I teach this a lot and I talk about this a lot. The difference, there's two different, there's confidence and then there's reactionary confidence. Reactionary confidence is dependent on the environment. And if everything going well, I'm confident. If everybody says I'm a bum, I start to wonder if they're right. Self-generated confidence is independent of the environment, meaning the environment has no effect on this person's self-generated confidence. So I encourage teams to study that and come to a conclusion when evaluating a quarterback, and I do it myself. But I would say for somebody who has reactionary confidence, and it doesn't mean that you're going to fail, it's just harder and it's more emotionally draining. Somebody who has reactionary confidence, I like those guys sitting. Because it's probably not going to go well your rookie year. It usually doesn't. And you're talking about some isolated cases where guys balled out as rookies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's Mark Sanchez, number one rushing attack, number one defense. Ben Roethlisberger, great defense, great run game, Hall of Fame coach, a couple Hall of Fame receivers. So isolated cases. And Deshaun Watson had a great rookie year before he tore his ACL. Joe Burrow had a great rookie year before he tore his ACL. And then there's like a lot of guys who didn't, right? And the guys that are unwavering self-generated confidence, I think you can play them right away. So let's look at Bryce Young, who I believe has unwavering self-generated confidence. He played poorly and got benched his rookie year. And then when they gave him the reins back, balled out, and he's been balling ever since. I wasn't shocked by him coming off the bench and playing well, but I was definitely not shocked at him being unaffected by being benched. I got a long list of quarterbacks where if you put them in that situation, that might be what ends their career, whether they go number one or not. And so I'm a proponent of guys playing under that pretense. Is what is their emotional state as it pertains to how they create confidence? And, you know, every team's going to try really hard to put quarterbacks in a position to succeed, but it's hard to do, and it's even harder with a rookie.
Jordan, along those lines, when you're talking about confidence, you know, one of the most confident quarterbacks of this generation is Philip Rivers. And I know that you have likened Mays, I don't know if it's his overall makeup or mindset to Philip Rivers. Can you expound on that?
Man, they're eerily similar. Just this high energy, when they're going, they're talking, and they're being purposeful with their words. I mean, Philip Rivers talks all the time, but he's like purposeful. Like he doesn't ramble. He doesn't, you know what I mean? He has no ego. He has no interest. He could care less what you think of him. For him to be a guy who's never said a cuss word and one of the biggest trash talkers in NFL history is just like the most Philip Rivers thing ever, you know? But I just think the country confidence, hooper, golfer, great athlete, and just loves ball and just wants to beat you. And I don't even care if you're upset about it. I'm just going to beat you. Coming from a place of like love, like these guys are both, I think Philip's Catholic and Drake's Christian. Like they're just like, they're coming from a place of love. They genuinely want what's great for everybody, but they're totally not going to let you win. It's really refreshing. There's more quarterbacks playing today that are like that than not. But yeah, the Drake May, Philip Rivers, the third guy thrown in the mix there, he's not as big of a name, but Josh McCown is really like Drake's always reminded me of Josh McCown too. Who's a Vikings quarterback coach. And, I played with Josh in Chicago. Those guys are all really, really similar. The hooper, trash talker, confident, and very purposeful with their words.
Yeah, Josh is an unbelievable guy, as you know. I covered him when he was with the Jets.
He's one of the all-time great dudes.
Yes, yeah, and I guess I should have known this, but it slipped my mind. If I did know it, he did coach Drake May in high school, so there's that.
He took a year off of figuring out. He was done playing. Do I want to get into coaching? And he went back to his hometown, and I remember him telling me, because I had Drake May at the Elite 11, and he goes, hey, my quarterback just made the Elite 11. I was like, what do you mean your quarterback? Like, what are you doing now? He's like, oh, I'm coaching high school football. The kid I'm coaching is coming to the Elite 11. Let me know what you think. I remember that conversation, and that was Drake May.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, Drake.
Go ahead,
Manish.
I gotta ask you something because it took off in Boston, which you're fully aware of, entering the AFC Championship game, in which you said Jared Stidham, who I know that you know well, if he plays at his best and Drake May plays at his best, there's not that much of a difference. Now, we'll never really know because the elements of that game kind of turned it into a different type of game. But can you kind of explain a little bit in detail what you meant when you said that?
Yeah, it's not a if I have them throw next to each other, who does what each thing better? And there are things that Jarrett would do better. Jarrett's an elite thrower of the football. It's just not known. And people may see this, or if I did a video on it, a bunch of people go, no, I watched him play preseason. He's not that good. It's like, okay. Well, I've watched him throw with some of the most elite throwers on the same field, and they all think he has a cannon. So, you know, Jarrett has the unique ability to spin and throw the football, and he's a lot faster than people realize. And so my thing was like, there's not a – from a physical trait standpoint, there's just not a big drop-off from Bo Nix to Jarrett Stidham. And in some cases, it wouldn't be a drop-off. It'd be an upgrade. And that's not an indictment on Bo Nix. I'm a huge Bo Nix fan. Just nobody really knows how good Jarrett is. And, oh, man, there's a handful of us where nobody's more bummed that that started snowing the way that it did, because you can't evaluate a player in a blizzard when it's the first time every single person on the field's ever done it. I mean, Jarrett threw a dime back shoulder on 3rd and 8. That was dropped because it's a blizzard. So, to answer your question, I just think Drake can move and make plays with his legs as he did in that game. He can make every throw on the field, and he processes quickly. And those are things that Jarrett does as well. He just hasn't had a chance to showcase it because I think he was going to be the starter in Denver, and then Bo Nix just was ready to play as a rookie. And so when those things can keep happening, to the people that jump into the comment section and don't think I know what I'm talking about, the same person who Bo Nix got ran out of Auburn, and I got interviewed by Sports Illustrated, and he's leaving Auburn. And this guy just, I don't remember who it is, but he goes, I remember you told me that Bo Nix could be a top pick in this draft, or a top pick in the draft. And now what do you think? And I go, I think he's got the same exact ceiling. I think he could be a top 10 pick. And they posted on Sports Illustrated and on their Instagram, that I said he was going to be the number one pick. And I just got smoked for it. Then you fast forward and it's like, my bad, I was off by 7. And so on this Jarrett Stidham thing, there's a lot of people have opinions on it. They just have no data on it. And so, yeah, this is a guy that can play at a really high level. And when he gets an opportunity to get his own team, is when I'll circle back.
You going back to Drake May, you spent a lot of time, obviously, working with Josh Allen. And up here, you know, you hear all the time that there's a lot of similarities in Josh's game and Drake's game. Do you see that same thing?
Yeah, I think physically and just how much they love the game and a student of the game for sure. But Drake was much further along when he entered the league than Josh was in terms of just what he was exposed to. You know the story about Drake's older brothers playing elite basketball and the dad was this, and he was an elite 11 quarterback. And you go around to regionals around the country and then you go through an interview process and you make it, and it's a TV show, and you're throwing with the other top guys in the country, and you're being recruited, and he got offered a bunch of money in NIL to transfer and didn't. Those are all experiences that Drake had before he was selected 3 overall. Those were not the experiences that Josh had growing up. Josh had no offers. Josh had none. And you know what I mean? He played at Wyoming. Mm-hmm. They didn't, you know, and so he went to JUCO. So there's a lot of things about Josh Allen's story that make him who he is today. But if you just look at their experience in like leading up to being selected, Drake had just a lot more exposure to what NFL guys go through than Josh did at that time. And boy, did Josh overcome it. But what took Josh, you know, his third seasons when he made a big jump, Drake did it in his second. I'm not interested in comparing. I just know that Drake and a lot of these guys had a major head start over some of these guys who were under-recruited and played at small schools. And, you know, Jordan Love played at Utah State. And you can start to come up with a lot of these where you go, wow, that's impressive that guy overcame that.
Just to piggyback on that real quick, Jordan, is it going to happen for Josh Allen? I mean, there's no bigger fan of Josh Allen than me. He's in my book, no disrespect to Patrick Mahomes, because the last 2 years actually happened. So I'm being objective about it. I do think that Josh Allen is the best player in football. And I think there are a lot of reasons why he hasn't gotten to the Super Bowl at this point. You had mentioned Joe Brady a little bit earlier when referencing Darnold. And now he's got, you know, not that much of a difference. He's still going to be working with Brady like he did last year. But what do you think it will take for Josh Allen to ultimately become a Super Bowl champion in this league?
I definitely think he's going to win one. I'll say one plus. I think he's right there. He's the best player in the world. He's, has the ability to beat you as good as anybody else without anything, with less around him. And I don't mean in general on the roster. Maybe guys don't play that great of a game, and he can still beat you. So, you know, all the superlatives for Josh, it couldn't be a better just human. But I do think it's inevitable. And, I think it's, you know, there's things on the roster, but there's things on everybody's roster, right? Seattle will make some moves this offseason if they win it. But I think at the end of the day, it's these moments being handled better. Not by him, by everybody. I mean, to win a Super Bowl, it really, at the end of the day, it comes down to a series of moments. That kick, that down, that play. And they've just been sometimes one of those moments away, sometimes 5 of those moments away. But you train all year and you pour everything into it, and you end up a couple of moments away. And that's why I think, you know, and whatever Josh is going to learn and take from this season, you know, he was really hurt, you know, through the playoffs and battled through it. But whatever he takes from that last game and whatever he takes from the games leading up to it, I just think the sum of all that experience and the improvements made around him, what I see happening, I think is why I believe inevitably at some point the Bills will have a Super Bowl back there.
I did want to just really quickly circle back to Sam. I know that you work with both Darnold and Joe Burrow year round. So just, you know, from a week to week standpoint, how do you consult with him? How do you kind of help him? He's obviously got Kubiak and his own coaching staff in Seattle, but what do you do to kind of, you know, give him tips in season?
Yeah. So all my clients are on annual retainer. I work year round with people. So the off season, we spend a lot of time during OTAs. Typically I'm watching practice and providing thoughts and input on really at the end of the day, movement and mechanics. And then in season, same thing, watching games and shooting different videos and putting it in a folder and guys getting a routine of whether that's Tuesday night, Wednesday before practice, kind of almost outsourcing the mechanical side of things. The most common quarterback coaches on NFL teams today are, will tell you when you meet them that they're not big mechanics guys and they focus on the X's and O's and execution and scheme and protections and all of that stuff. And it's awesome. And I've met a lot of great ones. And so on the mechanical side of things, and it's going well and you're doing the thing that you worked on in a game, reinforcing a week and showing you doing that well to yourself, is really powerful, from an envision, from a vision perspective. So, yeah, it's an annual thing and, weekly drips of content and touch points, for the better part of 52 weeks.
Yeah. For anyone who doesn't understand how thorough Jordan is, you know, there was a time when Sam was coming out of USC, which you were, you know, working with, some technology that concluded that Sam Darnold was dropping his elbow, I believe, on passes that were longer than 32 yards in the air, which is so precise that really grabbed my attention. So, I mean, that's the kind of information that Darnold, Burrow, and these other quarterbacks are getting from you. It's money well spent, let's put it that way.
And believe it or not, I've been doing that in baseball forever. Quarterback development is, I think, like 10 years behind baseball, probably 15 behind golf, just in terms of how data is used. And, again, quarterback development, not the NFL. They use data for all sorts of stuff at the combine. But in the quarterback space, I'd say 10 years behind baseball.
Wow.
That's incredible. As somebody who's not, you know, in all that, like that's something that I would never think it goes through these players' heads as they're going through their development. It's just not something that would be
incredible opportunity anything for my team. And it's essentially a white space.
It's incredible. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
It's a $1 million question. I mean, we talked to you for like 45 minutes. So I want to ask you, on Super Bowl Sunday, if Drake May is playing at his very best and Sam Darnold is playing at his very best on the same day, who ends up hoisting the Lombardi Trophy?
If that's the case, then which defense played better? I didn't follow the Patriots like that, but I don't think they played a defense like Seattle. And that can suffocate you. You can see ghosts. I mean, when you level up and Seattle has seen defenses that I think are as good as New England. I think New England's a great defense, one of the best defenses in the league. I'm just saying Seattle's played a couple of the other best defenses in the league, like pretty recently. And outside of weather, I know they played Houston, but that was a blizzard too. So, and their quarterback turned it over like crazy. So your defense doesn't have to do as much. So that's the scenario. I expect Drake May and Sam Darnold to play their best ball, you know, be at their best when their teammates need it. That's what they do. And that's what I think will happen. I just like Seattle's defense better than New England's, and New England might be my second favorite defense in the league. But Seattle's my first. They just have too many answers, too many people that can cover man-to-man, pass rusher, scheme, effort, all of it. Human worry is just, everyone wants to compare it to somebody in the Legion of Boom, but I think when we fast forward 3 years, we're going to go, oh, that's the best defensive player in the league. Like, wait till this guy learns what he's doing. I mean, he's just going to play anywhere. It might have like a Troy Polamalu effect on a defense for like 8 years. I mean, that's incredible. And so I just think Seattle's defense. And then the other thing is Seattle's special team has, you could argue, like, I mean, they were down 16 to the Rams at home, and then you take a punt back to the house. Like, that never happens on a regular team. It happens on a team. But I think Seattle's special teams, I think it's going to come down to that type of situation in which defense and special teams plays better, because I think both offenses will look really good.
Yeah, I mean, the special teams is 100% John Schneider for trading for Rashid Shaheed. That was probably one of the best in-season trades I've seen in at least like a decade or so. But yeah, I agree with you. I think you said it best. And I, as a fan, I hope that we see the best out of both those quarterbacks, because, you know, Drake's had an unbelievable season, MVP caliber season, and Sam is peaking at the right time. So I think hopefully these guys play at their best, and yeah, you know, we see what the best may the best quarterback win. And you know, in my I'm supposed to be unbiased, but in my biased opinion, I think that'll be Sam Darnold. Bird, you got anything to add here?
I'm on the other side, obviously a biased guy. I think it's going to be Drake May, but no, I don't have anything else. Jordan, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to chat with us about the quarterbacks, especially these two elite players that are playing in the Super Bowl. I can't thank you enough again for taking the time to chat with me and Manish.
Yeah, you guys enjoy the week.
Thanks. And again, you guys can catch Jordan. He does Quarterback Summit. He's a quarterback consultant. ThreatPerformance.com, a place where you get to learn that the best nutrition for young athletes is not Sour Patch Kids and Pepsi. So you'll get some good insight on the nutritional element of developing young athletes. Just a wealth of knowledge on so many different fronts. It's been a pleasure. As always, I always find myself smarter after I'm done talking to you. So thanks again for all the insight that you provided, Jordan.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you. Take care. We'll see you next week.